770-3030. Now, here's the Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston.
Good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston, or if you're listening on Sunday night, AM 1260 WBIX. We have a good program planned for today. We're going to be talking with Michael Austin. He's the editor-in-chief of Autoblog, and he should be calling in shortly. And also, we're going to be reviewing the car that got me here today, which was the Audi A4 Allroad, and we'll talk about that. Got me through the little winter snow that we got, so there's something to talk about. Also, some of the things that are in the news as well. So we have a lot of good things to talk about today. And like I promised, with us on the phone is Michael Austin. He is the editor-in-chief of Autoblog. Michael, good morning and welcome to Boston.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. First off, for people who don't know, tell us about Autoblog.
Autoblog is, it's a huge site. We have a lot of, we cover everything.
Did you just use the word huge?
Yeah. Almost stopped myself. It's a great automotive site, bigly. Our tagline is we obsessively cover the automotive industry. So we have all of the new car model news. We have, tons of reviews and videos and, the occasional, check out this weird motorcycle hitting a deer or something. And then we also have a huge shopping. I can't stop now. We have a great shopping section. You can research new cars and, configure them and find a dealer to buy them from.
And you guys just did some awards this year. Tell us about especially the Technology of the Year Award.
Right, well, it's our only award, it's Technology of the Year, because we kind of see that as, the future of automobiles. Like, what's the most exciting thing going on in cars? I have old cars with manual steering. I love, all the old school stuff about driving, but it's moving in towards technology. So a big award is Technology of the Year. We give out two, one for a car and one for a feature. And this year we gave the car award to the Chevrolet Bolt and the feature award to Audi's latest adaptive cruise control, which needs a little bit of explanation because everybody has, some form of cruise control where it controls the distance to the cars in front and helps you work in traffic. Audi's innovation is that it, if you have the destination programmed into the navigation system, that ties into the cruise control system. So it'll slow down for corners ahead of time. If you have an on-ramp and there's no traffic in front of you, it can still slow down so you don't even have to hit the brakes. And that's an important step in moving towards more and more driver assistance as we get towards autonomous driving. So we thought that was a pretty big breakthrough.
Yeah, and even just the navigation system that Audi uses that overlays Google Earth on top of it, I find it weirdly distracting because all of a sudden now you're looking over at the navigation screen and you're looking at things that you've never seen. You could be driving the same road for 5 years in a row, and you go, oh, I didn't know that person had a swimming pool on the other side of their house.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a lake over there? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's pretty amazing stuff. And the Chevrolet Bolt, they're just going to start to sell that in Massachusetts next month. But it's a car that is, came to market a little bit early over the, quote-unquote, Tesla affordable model, the Model 3, but it looks like it may beat that Tesla to the mark on just about every front, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it wasn't specifically because it beat Tesla, but being a 250 mile EV in an affordable range really changes the idea of mobility and transforming transportation and how we look at it, right? Like, now all of a sudden, if somebody wants to have an EV as their only car, it's way more affordable and way more viable as a thing. You don't have to worry as much about the range. And also just the fact that, you know, to give Tesla some credit for pushing the automakers to do this, but the fact that it's coming from a company like General Motors is also pretty astonishing. That, you know, they're saying we're doing something that is completely contrary to, you know, 80 years of automotive history. To editorialize a little, I'm a little sad to see this company that did all this work to bring the Bolt out is now begging for relaxed fuel economy regs, but that's a different topic.
Yeah, it is, and that's one of those things that, when the fuel economy regulations came around and, you know, they said that, you know, cars were going to get, whatever, 54.5 miles per gallon, you know, in the back of my mind somewhere I said, you know, I think all the automakers are going to get together and go, nah, we just can't do it, too bad. You know, and we'll deal with it. But you look at cars like the Bolt, and you're like, here's a car that is got a pretty good design to it. Here's a car that most people can drive every day, every place they want to go, and they can avoid going to a gas station. And depending on, you know, where they charge, they may be able to fill up for free. So it's a pretty innovative idea. So I notice a lot of businesses now kind of that complimentary charging station sort of thing to get you into the business. And right now, at least, we'll see what happens in a year or two. But right now, every time I go by there, if I see a row of three or four, there's at least out here in Boston, you see one or two that might have cars plugged into them, and out of those one or two, one of those cars might actually have like a municipal plate on it that belongs to the state or city or whatever the case is. So this is a pretty good innovation. Can you tell us who was in the running to compete against the Bolt?
Yeah, so we're looking at the technology constantly throughout the year, and we come up with a list of finalists, and then we spend a week testing all of them. So the other car finalists were the Acura NSX and the Mercedes E-Class. The NSX, just because it's, the amount of technology they pack into the car, not just with the hybrid system, but the way they manufacture it and all these other innovations in bringing the car to life was really kind of redefining how you approach a sports car and how you approach performance. You know, the only other car that's done that is the Porsche 918, and it costs five times as much, even though the NSX is incredibly expensive. And then the E-Class really brings a new level of autonomy to a mass market car. Some credit goes out to Tesla's autopilot. The Mercedes is mostly a safety suite, and it's a lot of things you're never going to have to check, or, you know, hopefully never have to test. Like, if you're not paying attention and it sees traffic going, you know, cross traffic, you know, like through an intersection, it can hit the brakes and stop you from getting in that car. And then in one demo I had was even more astonishing, is that it calculates that you can make it clearly through. It'll let you sail through and, have a narrow bit. There's a lot of other things, like if somebody's encroaching on your lane to the left or right, it'll brake, do braking for you. It can detect a bicycle in your blind spot and hopefully help you prevent from, cutting off a bicycle. So, again, it was just this entire suite of electronics and driver aids that is a big step towards, you know, our movement further and further towards autonomy.
Yeah, I look at vehicle autonomy, it's a pretty cool thing, but, you know, you look, the problem is the vehicle manufacturers can't quite agree on, you know, that whole level 1 through 5 thing, and that level 3 seems like the one that is the one that you have to hover over the steering wheel, let the car drive until it doesn't, and then you have to jump in and take over. I want to be able to take a nap. I just want to, you know, I want to be able to, check what's going on in the world on my phone. I don't want to have to be ready to jump in just in case. And, I sat down with engineers from Ford and GM and Volvo a couple weeks ago at the Detroit Auto Show, and the three of them can't even agree on what, you know, level 1 and level 2 autonomy is. So I think we're a ways off till we're able to, you know, just hit a button and let our car drive where it's supposed to go. But you bring something like this Mercedes safety suite into the picture, where you look at how much people are distracted going down the road, at least the car's paying attention.
Yeah, and, you know, the level 3, you know, that's, like you said, that's where you're handing off control of the car, but you might have to intervene. You know, that's so hard that some people are saying, we're just going to skip that. We're only going to go, you know, we're only going to start from the top and work our way down. I agree with you. I think we're going to be at, we'll get to level 2, which is sort of like an autopilot where you can take your hands off the wheel, but you still have to be watching everything.
Right.
I think we'll be stalled there for a while. But also, you know, there's so much data. And once once these test cars get on the road, they start collecting more and more data. So I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm wrong, but I think we're going to be stalled at that level two for a while.
Yeah. You know, back to Autoblog, your site, you also have this guy, Dan Roth, that does podcasts, right?
Yeah, Dan, he went out on his own and did a new podcast.
Oh,
we
okay.
have our own podcast.
Oh, okay.
We miss Dan for sure. But yeah, Dan made the podcast what it was. So a ton of credit to him for, helping build that.
Yeah, I run into Dan here in the Boston area every couple of months or so. I know he's got a million things and kids and broken Volvos and whatever else he does. So he's always got something going on. So you know, you look at your two awards. You look at the Technology of the Year Car Award, the Chevrolet Bolt EV, the Feature Award, the Advanced Cruise Control on the Audi, and you look at both of those and you say, you know, this is the future. And like you said, you're kind of an old car guy as well. When you look at what was back when there was no power steering and no power brakes and you had to pay attention, and where we're going with things like a fully electric Bolt EV that you can drive every day and, you know, commute 100 miles round trip back and forth to work with no trouble whatsoever, and cruise control that's smarter than probably half the drivers on the road. Where do you think, you know, when you look at where it's been and where it is now, where do you think the future is going to be?
It's really hard to see because, again, when you're looking at this idea of autonomy, the mixing with traffic is another problem that nobody has solved. You know, so maybe we'll get to a point, especially other places of the world, where they'll just make dedicated lanes or close off certain parts of a city or certain roads to autonomous driving. But I think electric is going to be a huge chunk of the future. Europe is, Germany still, it's not a law, but Germany has a resolution to try to move to electric by, I think, 2030.
Mm.
And as the technology keeps going further and further forward, there's a pretty solid consensus on, hey, you know, burning things that produce carbon dioxide are not good. So if we can prevent that, we'll do it. But also, you know, you look at companies like Aston Martin, you look at, you know, Lamborghini, you look at even Mazda, companies that are saying, hey, driving is important, and we love driving. And, you know, our Alfa has a ton of momentum going on, you know, with their Super Bowl ad and with, you know, bringing the Giulia back. People still identify, you know, there's a chunk of the population that's just like, no, I want that dream, you know, the sort of car, you know, I want the wall poster.
Mm.
So, wherever we go, I think there's still going to be room for, you know, gas will hang on for a little while, you know, even if it's just in sort of like sports or exotic cars, you might have to pay a premium for it if we get to, you know, this is completely hypothetical, you know, 15, 20 years down the road. But I look at those things like Alfa Romeo and like Aston Martin, and it sort of warms my heart and says, you know, there's still a market for people that care about driving.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. When people ask me about it, I say there's, in a lot of cases, there's nothing I like more than driving, and then in a lot of cases, there's nothing I hate more than driving. You know, but when you get,
right.
Yeah, when you get the right car on the right road in the right conditions, driving is, it can't be more enjoyable. It's just a really good time. And then you mentioned, you know, one of your runner-up vehicles, the Acura NSX, and you're like, when did hybrids get to be fun?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, Porsche just did that with the Panamera. The hybrid version of that is a performance. You know, they're not really pushing the green anymore.
Right.
And you know, going back to the future, you think about, I have a colleague in New York that, you know, doesn't own a car, and he bought a Fiat 124 Spider. And you think about the future of car sharing, or, you know, other things where you know, maybe we're bringing in light rail, or maybe you can borrow an autonomous car to get you on your errands. You know, people that don't own cars already, that live in that scenario where they have public transit, they're buying a car as their sort of weekend getaway.
Mm.
So I think that's something that's going to still be part of the world of automobiles.
Yeah, I don't think people are going to, like, share the, I'm kind of making up the year, the, you know, 1969 Fiat 124, though.
No. that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, they don't want to be sharing the repairing of it. Yeah, Yeah, so, but, you know, it's, you know, looking at these things and looking at the way the future's going to be, looking at the way cars are, you're right. I think there is, you know, there are people who just look at cars as an appliance. They're just something to get you from where you're going to be, and that's kind of the whole car sharing thing. But there are people that truly love cars and care about them, and, you know, whether it's an enthusiast site, you know, a fanboy site, or whether it's people just doing research, but they're like, hey, if I'm gonna buy an SUV, I want to have an SUV that at least has the features I want in it that can also be enjoyable to drive and not just a box with four wheels on it, and just make it a better experience. So I think we're always going to see that. And I think, you know, every once in a while when somebody decides that the, you know, as much as people hate the car buying experience, the idea of sort of the Amazon model of you'll just pick out a car and it'll be, you know, drop shipped to your house and there it is and here's your new car. I think people still like the whole idea of, you know, sliding behind the wheel and saying, I like this or I don't like this or I like this feature or I want to go to this car show to see these new models. You know, people still have a certain amount of passion. And when I talk to people and they say, oh, I don't think people care about cars, and you have a room of 50 people and you say, how many people have a name for their car, and half the hands go up. You know, people don't name their washing machines.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, people can love their washing machines, but nobody ever nicknames their washing machine, and people nickname their cars all the time, which, you know, you spend that much time in it, I suppose, why not? So, you know, you have a lot going on the site right now. Any news tips you want to share with us before we let you go?
I was going to say, not really, but I went to the Miami Boat Show this week, and I got to ride in the AMG Cigarette Boat, which is like two engines of like 1,350 horsepower each. It does. We did 120 on the ride when we rode in it, so look for that this week coming out. Is describing how crazy it is to do 120 on the water. That was pretty great.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting that Mercedes wasn't the only one that showed boats, car companies that showed boats at the boat show, right?
Right. Honda was there, and they had kind of like a concept engine. And, you know, Honda's the biggest motor or engine manufacturer in the world when you think of just the Ford, you know, internal combustion engine. So they make a ton of outboard motors, and they use their technology from cars to help, you know, meet EPA regulations and make them run more efficient. And there's even a company called Seven that puts a 620 horsepower Chevy small block into an outboard engine. It's amazing.
It's the thing must be 8 feet tall. It's got to be crazy. Yeah.
No, it's surprisingly compact. That's the of the small block.
Wow. Yeah. No. Pretty amazing stuff. One more question. You know, every kid growing up who's ever watched cartoons and even today, everybody says, "When am I getting my flying car?"
Man, you know, I wish that too. I don't know. It's I'm going to blame regulations. You know, you look at all that we have crash regulations and all the things it takes to make a car. You know, that's a lot trickier when you get to a flying car,
yeah.
Right? Because you can't survive a crash test and be light enough to fly. But man, I hope for it too.
Yeah, I saw something. What, in Dubai, you're going to be able to, instead of getting an Uber, you're going to be able to get like an Uber drone that can come and pick you up.
Yeah, and last year at CES, a year ago, there was a Chinese drone that could carry one person, I think, for a 20-minute flight.
So right.
Maybe we'll get that. You'll put the quadcopter on the roof.
There you go. There you go. Hey, Michael, thanks for taking some time out and joining us up here in Boston.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, take care. Bye-bye now. That was Michael Austin, the editor-in-chief of Autoblog. Why don't we take a break, pay some bills? My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor program. You're listening on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston.
Space. Honda Cars of Austin is Greater Boston's neighborhood Honda dealer with over 800 new Hondas available to choose from. Just 5 minutes from Boston on Route 99 in Everett, our beautiful new showroom makes your Honda Cars of Boston experience even better. Visit online at HondaCarsOfBoston.com and see all of our tremendous purchase, lease, finance, and certified pre-owned specials. Honda Cars of Boston on Route 99 in Everett is the place for great buys from the Honda guys. Give them a call at 1-800-65-HONDA.
Hello, this is Carol Howley Simmons, General Sales Manager of Salem Media Group Boston. As you know, 2017 is WROL Irish 950's Golden Jubilee, and as we plan our upcoming celebrations, we are feeling nostalgic and think it is only fitting to dance down memory lane with all of you. We would like you to call us at 617-691-2534 and share your memories and stories of what WROL Irish 950 has meant to you over the years. We will record you and then share your words each weekend over the airwaves. Our phone lines are open 24/7, so call us anytime at 617-691-2534. For 50 years, WROL Irish 950 has proudly made history every Irish weekend, right up to this very weekend. Come make it with us.
The mission of the Allied War Veterans Council is to mobilize communities to honor, support, and serve America's veterans and military service members. The council is made up of volunteers who are dedicated heart and soul to ensuring that veterans and their families receive the support and opportunities they have rightfully earned. For more than 112 years, Boston has captured the world's attention with the gesture of honoring and recognizing our veterans and servicemen and women through the St. Patrick's Day Parade in South Boston. Not just the celebration of all things Irish, this parade is the celebration of all things American and the great people who put their lives in harm's way every day for us. If you believe in the mission to help and support veterans and their families, the Allied War Veterans Council of South Boston needs your help now. Please donate today by visiting online southbostonparade.org. Your support changes lives for veterans throughout Boston.
WROL Boston. You're listening to The Car Doctor.
Get out of my dreams.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program. If you'd like to join us, our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. I want to thank Michael Austin, the editor-in-chief of Autoblog, for joining us this morning and telling us about the awards that they had. I've gone to their site a few times. I can't say I'm a regular... I don't stop there on a regular basis, but they always have some good stuff there, and it's always worth taking a look at. So Autoblog, A-U-T-O-B-L-O-G. Take a look and see what's there. The people from Haggerty Insurance announced their annual hot list of future collectibles. This is always a tough call because, Dave Brunell at Hemmings used to say, past performance is not an indication of future something or other, wealth, I guess. So, you never know what's going to really happen, but... you know, one of the ones, his hot list for 2017 models, and this is... the age of driverless vehicles isn't here yet, so which new 2017 vehicles are expected to one day join the ranks of the fully drivable classic collectibles? According to the valuation experts at Haggerty, 10 vehicles in the 2017 production run by major worldwide manufacturers stand out as the likeliest to grow in value and appeal to classic car enthusiasts. So in other words, these are cars I guess you can buy for 2017, hold on to them for a bunch of years, and maybe they'll actually be worth more rather than less, which most cars usually happens. All 10 have that it factor that makes them stand out from the crowd, according to McKeel Haggerty. He's the CEO of Haggerty. In some cases, it's power. In some cases, it's innovation or drivability. But all of them have a quality that defines a future classic. In order to be eligible for the Haggerty hot list, a vehicle must be produced within the 2017 model year and have an MSRP of less than $100,000. So the Alfa Romeo Giulia, which Michael talked about, $72,000. It's 505 horsepower. It can reach 60 miles an hour in about 3.8 seconds from a complete standstill because of its twin-turbo V6 engine, beating every other car in its class around the Nürburgring ring. Julia takes the crown in that segment. The Audi TT RS is about $60,000. Bringing supercar speed to the sports car market is this widely popular follow-up to the TT RS. With 400 horsepower from the widely acclaimed five-cylinder engine, the new TT corners at an extreme 1.2 G-forces and accelerates to 62 miles an hour in 3.7 seconds. The Camaro ZL1, you know, when isn't there a Camaro that's been worth more money than it started with? I guess the Camaro has seen many generations and performance upgrades, and this is... What you doing?
I was trying to do the preview, but it doesn't work.
But you got to take one off.
I did.
No, now try the preview button.
It doesn't work. That's...
Well, okay.
I was just testing it, sorry.
Okay, that's okay. All right. Where were we? Chevrolet Colorado ZR2. Americans love their trucks, especially purpose-built off-road versions. The ZR2 comes in a suite of off-road tech, including dynamic shocks, locking front and rear differentials, increased ride height, widened track. Its future collectability lives in the hands of Chevrolet's production volume planning staff. Chevrolet Corvette Grand Sport, $65,000 with a sprint to 60 miles an hour in 3.6 seconds and an 11.8 second quarter mile time. The Grand Sport has technology to compete with the big boys while offering a striking visual reference to its ancestors from 63 to 65. The Fiat 124 Spider, we kind of talked about that with Michael as well. When Fiat announced they were resurrecting this classic 124 Spider, many enthusiasts were ecstatic. When the firm announced the architecture would be shared with the Miata, which made last year's hot list, Roadsters, fans knew they were in for a treat because you already have something good to work with. With a 0 to 60 mile an hour sprint in a healthy 6.3 seconds, the 124 Spider provides more power than its cousin, the Miata, through its multi-air turbo engine. The Ford Raptor, which has been around since 2009, this is the F-150 truck. It's an off-road truck, bigger muscles, additional horsepower, and weighing 500 pounds less. The Mazda Miata RF, this is a interesting car because it brings an exciting new feature, a hard-top Targa roof instead of a convertible, featuring the same fantastic qualities that make the Roadster Miata such a hit. The RF opens the door to a new market with more rigid structure and coupe-like design. The Porsche 718 Cayman Boxster, they're in the $50,000 to $60,000 range. For those who love a car, love driving, there are a few things better than driving a Porsche, especially the 718. And then again, the Toyota 86, which is really, if you don't know what the Toyota 86 is, it's really a Scion FRS. You might also think it looks an awful lot like a Subaru, which it really is. The 86 brings a more aggressive styling, wider stance, agility turned up a notch through shock tuning. It has a Subaru engine in it. So kind of interesting stuff. Hagerty is one of those companies that you can get stated value insurance. So if you have a classic or collectible car and you don't want to insure it like a normal vehicle, what you can do is you can... It's pretty easy. You just call them up, you take some pictures, you send it to them. It can't be a car you drive every day, and you can get a pretty reasonable insurance premium. So something worth looking at. Our phone number, if you would like to join us, phone lines are open at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Promised I would do trivia and also a car review. Well, let's do ones based on the other lately, and that's what I've been trying to do. So we'll start with the car review, which is the 2017 Audi A4 Allroad. When it comes to great handling small wagons, the list isn't very long, but certainly one of the best is the Audi A4 Allroad. The Allroad is a small all-wheel drive wagon powered by a 2-liter, 252 horsepower, 4-cylinder engine that powers all four wheels through a 7-speed automatic transmission. There are several drive modes, sport, comfort, and even an off-road setting, which the other day driving driving out of my driveway. I was out earlier, and the plow came by, and more snow. So I said, let's see if what the off-road does, off-road setting does, and the all-road also has some protection against, if you truly are going off-road, to protect against hitting hard things. So kind of interesting things. Like all Audi products, the interior is premium-grade quality throughout. The controls are generally simple and easy to use. The front seats are comfortable, supportive. In the case of our test model, had quick-acting seat heaters, kind of a nice thing on these cold days. The rear seats can accommodate three, but really better suited to two. It's a small car. The cargo area is quite good, and with the rear seats folded, rival many small SUVs. On-road handling is as precise as a sports sedan, and the overall ride is pretty smooth and comfortable. This is, if you're looking for something a little bit different, if you're looking for a car that handles well, you can put some stuff in it if you need to, has all-wheel drive, gets pretty decent fuel economy, 23 city, 28 highway. I've been averaging about 26, 27 overall. That 252 horsepower four-cylinder turbocharged engine seems to work really well in this. They don't give them away. Our car, the price as tested with everything in it, which includes a big sunroof, the upgraded sound system, all the, you know, the premium quality features, I guess you would find, $55,575. But again, very comfortable car, very stable car. Great bad weather car, certainly worth looking at if you're thinking about a small all-wheel drive car that just happens to be a sport wagon. Good choice. So, time for trivia. Ooh. Trivia music getting ready. There we go. So, this is something I guess I hadn't really thought of before. Audi is owned by Volkswagen. I think a lot of people know that. Before Volkswagen, who owned Audi? So Audi's owned by Volkswagen. But before Volkswagen, who owned Audi? If you know the answer, give us a call at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030, and we will give you a prize of some kind. I don't know exactly what it will be. Also, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be we're going to be at the AAA Travel Marketplace, which is going to be at Gillette Stadium. That is the same weekend, by the way, that the rest of the fellas here are going to be at the annual St. Patrick's Day Parade down on Cape Cod. So the St. Patrick's Day Parade will be going on. They'll be down at, I'm sure, at Captain Parker's, where they always are. They're always a great place down there in the Cape Cod Irish Village. But the parade kind of runs right up 28 in the Yarmouth through into Dennis, and just a good time. So if always worth taking a look at and seeing what's going on there. So Lexus going to reveal a new hybrid at the Geneva Auto Show, and that's going to be the big sedan, the LS. So the LS500, which I saw in Detroit, they're actually going to have a hybrid version of it. Hybrids are everywhere now, and like the gasoline version, the 2018 LS500 will be, adopt a new and much more aggressive body language, but the Japanese luxury brand is keeping mum about what it has in store under the hood, other than it will be some sort of a hybrid. So that'll be sort of interesting. So what that really means is they have a hybrid model in just about every vehicle. One other thing I thought was kind of interesting, Smart, the little Smart cars, they're going all electric in the U.S. market. According to what I read, the car hasn't done as good as it could, but barely a year after the redesigned lineup, Daimler AG Smart's brand has confirmed it will stop selling gasoline-powered vehicles in the U.S. and Canada, and they'll focus exclusively on an electrified version. Now, I guess I should have noticed that at the Detroit Auto Show when I was there, because every Smart car on display at the Detroit Auto Show was an electric Smart car, and I never went over and asked. I just figured they were trying to push the idea of an electric Smart, and it is the latest development in a series of, they're calling setbacks, but I don't really think it is, which has continued to lose ground despite last year's redesign. The timing was unfortunate, according to industry analysis, coming in at a point where gasoline prices were hovering, you know, $2.25 a gallon. But I remember talking to Herb Chambers, And Herb Chambers talked about how he wasn't all that enthused with the smart gasoline car. And then he took an electric one for a ride, and he's like, this is really where, this is the car to buy, because it's zippy to drive around. It gets pretty good response out of the electric motors. Battery life is pretty good. And it's really inexpensive. And if you lease one and you factor in the energy credits you get for it, the car's almost free. So, maybe something to think about with that particular car. So all the next smart cars will be battery, electric smart cars. Let's go over and talk to Peter. Peter? Probably have to turn the phones on. See, it isn't just Kenzie that needs to remember to turn the phones on. It's Karen that needs to remember to turn the phones on. Peter.
Yes.
It works a lot better when the button's on that says telephone.
Why don't shut
them off? Yeah. Very complicated.
Yes it is. Yes it is.
Watson, can you hear me?
I can. Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Oh, very good. Oh, well.
Do you have an answer? Do you have an answer to try?
I'm going to take a stab at it. Originally, they were Auto Union, and then that's what Audi originally. You remember Auto Union from 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Mercedes owned them at one point.
Well, that was the answer I was looking for. Daimler-Benz owned them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the facts about Audi that I think surprised a lot of people. There wasn't even an Audi available in the U.S. market until 1970, and before the Volkswagen took over, Daimler-Benz owned the company. So it was in fact Mercedes or their parent company, Daimler-Benz. So
You know what, Jean-Paul, I was wondering. I still don't know. I've even talked to people who sell Audis. I think the AU means Auto Union, and DI, I don't know. It's something German that means probably Deutsche something or other. I still don't know what the AUDI all means, but I think AU is Auto Union.
You have to look at the four. What helps clarify that is. The four rings of Audi. You think about the logo and what the logo really means, and that they have those four rings because that was the original four car companies that actually formed Audi. So I think you're kind of onto that when you go what does this all mean.
Mm-hmm.
And then you I guess can kind of come up with an answer about that. But some of the history with Audi is they've been around I guess what since the 30s. But it was let's see, here's what it says. Here's what the internet's telling me. The Audi four ring emblem symbolizes the merger of, in 1934, four previously independent motor vehicles brands: Audi, DKW, Horsch, and Wanderer. In 1969, Auto Union amalgamated with NSU Motor Works, and so that's kind of where they went. So it was Horsch, Audi, Wanderer, DKW, Auto Union, and then Auto Union from Engelstadt, and it kind of went on from there. So that's sort of it, I guess.
That helps a bit. NSU, they all had this, as you know from the history of Auto Union and NSU with the racing. Way back in the 30s, they had the land speed record. They were fast.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, they were beating beating Mercedes back then.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Hey, Peter, stay right there. We'll send you out something that you probably won't want, but you'll get it anyway. Okay?
Is it more of that 200-mile-an-hour car wax?
But you never know.
I still have some of that. It's very good.
Okay, good. All right. Well, stay right there. We'll get you something. Okay, stay right there.
Thanks.
All right, good enough. Okay, so somebody is going to get Peter's address. And then in a bit, we'll go on to whoever else is on hold. So we'll get to that in just a minute. I thought this was sort of interesting. Jaguar is teaming up with Shell for in-car payment system. Shell and Jaguar teamed up to allow Jaguar and Land Rover owners to use the in-control to pay for gas without the need for cash or credit card. Today's infotainment systems will tell you anything from how long it will take to get you home to the cheapest gas. Gas price is located now. If you drive a Jaguar, it'll even pay for the gas once you get there. It's a new partnership agreement between Jaguar and Shell, which allows drivers with the luxury brand In Control infotainment system to pay for gas without even taking out their credit card. In a world where cash is no longer king, customers are increasingly using electronic payments and countless and contactless cards, according to the Jaguar Land Rover director of the Connected Car Future Technology System. So, I guess it's just another way. It's like people with Apple Pay and the other various things. You go and show them your phone. Same idea, I guess. But it's still eventually tied back to a credit card. So eventually, you're still gonna have to pay for it somehow or another. So when we had Michael Austin on the phone, I mentioned this in Dubai. Forget Uber or Lyft. Call a drone. Amazon's been talking about using delivery drones for some time now. However, if you're in Dubai, and they're saying later in the year, the delivery drones could be dropping off more than packages. They could be dropping off people. In fact, the drones will be autonomous, marrying two of the latest trends in transportation. Dubai's road and transportation industry agency has cleared the way for the Chinese-made drone company to dot the city's skyline. So, I don't know. I don't know about getting into a drone quite yet. But you know, maybe that's gonna be the way it is. And finally, in sort of one of those other little bits of news, Toyota is shifting its bet from conventional hybrids to plug-ins. They're going to be doing more with plug-in hybrids. They feel that that hybrids are good, but plug-in hybrids are even better. So. Toyota, the company, gave the world its first kind of really, you know, the Prius, you know, really the first good hybrid, I guess is a good way to say it, now expects the plug-ins to gain traction faster than some of the conventional ones. They just think there's going to be more to it. And I suppose if you want to buy a Mitsubishi Eclipse and you like the old Eclipse, well, you can buy a new one, but it's going to be an SUV. Or a crossover of some sort. After a five-year absence, the Mitsubishi Eclipse is set to make its return, or more precisely, when Mitsubishi will now call the Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross. And that slight name change suggests that it will be a crossover vehicle of some sort or another. Our phone number, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Let's talk to Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hey, good morning, John Paul.
How are you?
Glad to hear you.
I made it in spite of
yeah.
For those of you who follow me on Facebook and Twitter,
right.
I posted something this morning that the neuroviruses seem to have hit our household. So my wife was I wasn't feeling great yesterday afternoon and last night, and my wife was feeling okay, but by 10 o'clock not so much. So.
Oh. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So is she.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Well, I don't know what to say for it.
And she's blaming me.
Of course. Well.
So, I'm trying to stay.
Hang in there.
Yeah.
That's all we'll always do.
Yeah. I'm trying to stay hydrated.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I have a relative who's a doctor, and he said, always keep Gatorade in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Places all your electrolytes.
Yeah, other people say the little kid stuff, the Pedialyte stuff. Same idea.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So,
yeah, I don't know what that tastes like.
I'm drinking something that has coconut and pineapple in it. So.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty tasty.
Yeah, it'd be better. Be better if it had vodka mixed with it, maybe. But,
well.
Yeah.
No, why not? Is there any in the studio?
There isn't. Unfortunately, we never quite got that Tito's sponsorship. So.
Oh. I don't think there's anything in Marina Bay that even tells that. Anyway, we're really off the track here. I had an answer to the question, but that's okay. No. Only because I had a 78 and a 79 Audi 100 LS, and I was told, beautiful car with a very bad electric system, and ended up, out of frustration, getting a Buick Regal after the last one. Died on me, I think, several times. But it get me through the blizzard of 78. Had some of the best traction I've ever had in a car, in the 100 LS, which was, I was told when I bought it, a place that doesn't exist anymore, Rachel Audi.
Oh, yeah.
That it was originally, the 100 LS design was originally a Mercedes design. I'm not sure that's the case, but it does it varies. Bit of a resemblance, I suppose, to a Mercedes.
All I really know about Wolfgang Rietzel, the guy who owned Rietzel Porsche Audi, I remember being in that dealership one time, and I was out in the shop talking to somebody I knew who worked there, and they were having trouble with an older 911 turbo, and this was back in the days where there wasn't mobile phones, it was just cordless phones, and you know, this is the guy who owned the dealership, so you always think the dealership guy is more about sales than he is about service, but that wasn't the case with him. He walks over, he grabs his cordless phone, and he calls he called some engineer in Germany, and it was, you know, I heard him kind of on the phone, you know, Guten Abend, it's Rietzel, you know, and he's talking in German to the guy, and they get the answer for whatever they needed to do to tweak the turbos in this 911 to get it to run better. But he had a direct connection to the factory in Germany, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I met him a couple of times because I had so many problems with my Audis. He did step in, it was even beyond him. Yeah. I understand that he was a race car driver, I think.
Someone told me that. I don't know if that's true, because there was also a Wolfgang Rietzel that was a race car driver. So I don't know if people confused the two.
Well, I think I read it in his obituary.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if that's even true either, but it could be more fake news. I don't know. But it was a beautiful car. The construction of it was fine, but as you probably know, I mean, the electrical system was as bad as any English car, I guess, you could get.
Oh, yeah. No, it was actually pretty interesting, because the people that that kind of went out on their own and opened up little repair shops that specialized in Volkswagen and Audi, you know, they made a really good living because they had a fair amount of customers, and just based on that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was just spending money off, you know, pissed, and I just said, this is crazy. But I did actually have another question, and I just, I have a Mazda 6, a 2009, and I thought I was having some tire problems. I brought it back to the dealership. It also involves AAA, which I want to praise them. And they found out that my left front axle, I guess there's a boot over it.
Okay.
It had cracked.
Okay.
And it had weakened the axle, and so they not only replaced it. It was corked. It ran a cup. They replaced it and gave me a free loaner for the day that it took to replace it. And AAA comes in, because it was through AAA that I bought my extended warranty.
Oh, okay.
Which is really great. And I think it was Mercury's insurance company.
Yeah.
Really good. They actually they sent the check, I was told, before the work was completed.
Wow.
So they really stand behind, AAA stands behind them, and they're really a good company. So my only question is it likely that the right front will also go?
You would think that would be the case. You know, everything kind of has a, you know, determined lifespan, and that, you know, you would think that would probably be the case, but you never know. It's one of those things that, you know, if you think of that as, you know, whether it's, you know, something like an axle, or whether it's, you know, something as, you know, like a ball joint, you would say, well, why's, you know, this ball joint on this left side is completely worn out, and why isn't the one on the right side? You know, sometimes it just happens. So, So you just don't know, but it could have been a manufacturing issue. It could have been something torqued a little too tight or left a little bit loose, and it took 8 years for it to pop up and have a problem. So
I thought it was again. I think we had a discussion a couple weeks ago about tires.
Mm-hmm.
When I got replacement tires, I got Nexum
tires. Mm-hmm.
And the thing I don't like about them is they seem to settle out pretty quickly when I start up in the morning. And I always think that there's something wrong with it.
Mm.
And it kind of rounds out, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it doesn't show up on the tire pressure gauge. So tires are okay, but they just tend to settle out. Now, my car's in garage anymore since I moved. Don't have a garage. So I don't know if that contributed to either or both of the problems of the tires and or the axle just sitting outside.
Well, I mean, cars like being in garages, but on the other hand, you know, they're designed to be outside, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's always, did the axle issue first present itself as kind of a squeak?
Nothing. No, I had no idea. I went in because I bought the tires from the dealership.
Yep.
And I thought there was something wrong with the tires, that they were out of round or something. And they checked them, and when they did that, that's when they found the front left axle was the boot. I don't know, is that what they call it? The cover was cracked, and I guess water was seeping into the axle.
So yeah, okay.
They're the ones that determined it needed repaired. But I never felt it. I don't know what I would have felt.
Yep. Yeah, over time, once the water got in and the grease got out, you would have started to hear a noise.
Okay, no, I never did.
Yeah.
I think I did at one point. I think I have.
Yeah.
But it was an infrequent thing.
Yeah.
If I made a real tight turn.
Right. Exactly.
I might have heard it.
Yeah, that's pretty characteristic of an axle noise, especially on a tight turn. It goes away when you go straight, and that's just a lack of lubrication, and the joint is just kind of snapping back and forth. So, yeah.
Yeah. But it was really infrequent, and I think I probably heard it. Last time I heard it was sometime last summer.
Hmm.
So, it obviously didn't occur to me.
Right.
I was a little persistent on the tire issue, which wasn't the issue.
Yeah.
And they discovered it. But
yep.
Good dealership, and even better through AAA and the extended warranty service that saved me $800.
Well, thanks. So, thanks for the praise.
Thanks, AAA.
Okay.
You know, as you said, they stand behind everything they sell, and if there's a problem with the company, they'll replace it. So they'll get you another one.
They stand behind everything except what I say. Because,
well,
you know. Yeah, no, they do.
Okay, but you're never wrong, so you don't have that problem.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay. All right, take care, Paul.
Stay well, get well.
All right, yep. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Now.
Have a great day.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Let's go to Peter.
Hey, I'm Paul.
How are you?
Yeah.
Long time no speak.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking of some kind of a trivia question that your audience and you might like. It involves BMW.
Okay.
And the first one might be an easy. I have just two. The first one might be an easy one about what did BMW manufacture first? What was the first thing that they made when they started out? What did they do? You know, it's a type of motor.
Okay. All right. Yeah. We'll keep that one. We'll keep that one handy. What's the next one?
The other one is. The emblem, BMW blue and white emblem, do you know what that symbolizes?
Not at all.
Okay.
But that's why they have the internet.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so.
Well, the blue and white, it actually.
Don't give the answer out because, you know, we might use this next week.
Yes, indeed.
All right.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool because most people do not know what the answer is. But
all right.
It ties into the first question.
All right, good enough. Stay right there, or go away. One or the other. I don't know. We'll do something with you. Okay.
Yeah. So by the way, that fellow, I felt sorry for him when he was telling us about his Audi with the bad electricals. Probably Lucas.
Probably. I don't know when an Audi, but you know, Audi was one of those cars that, when they first came to the United States, they were road holding cars. They did well at Autobahn speed limits. They were the first ones were not really designed for typical United States driving. I remember driving an Audi 90 on a press trip, one of the few press trips I ever drove, and I said, "This is a great car as long as you keep it in second gear." It just wasn't. But fit, finish, fun to drive, and then some of the original, of course, Audi Quattros are legendary for what they were able to do and how they were able to perform. But compared to today's cars, they're sort of that, what was good and what was bad of the 80s sometimes. So
yeah,
all right.
GT Quattro.
Yeah, exactly.
Was the first one I ever drove. And it was amazing.
Amazing car.
It sounded like it was on rail.
Yeah, and still, the people that kind of go after older German cars, they are cars that people still love today.
Yeah. Well, I knew, I'll make this short and sweet, a co-ed, a lady in college days back in the early 70s, and she got an Audi from old daddy, and... Mm-hmm. And it was a good car. I don't know if it was the LS100 or it was just the 100.
Mm-hmm.
I forget.
Yep.
Yeah, but it was, for what it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty reliable, though.
No, until they break. They're all reliable until they break. All right, Peter, thank you.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye now. Let's go over to Tom. Tom?
Hello, John. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Very good. Okay, this question is seasonal, on a snowblower.
Okay.
I'm working on my snowblower. It's giving me some trouble. It's an old one, 40 years old. I took the carburetor apart and cleaning it out and so forth. Question is on the governor. Now, the linkage that goes to the governor, and the governor actually goes internal. What does the governor do? I don't really understand.
Well, it's kind of funny with snowblowers and other engines like that, that their whole job is to maintain a certain speed in the engine. And the weights on the governor, they're the thing that sort of control what the speed the engine runs at. So as in a lot of cases there are weights and, as the governor senses the engine speed, that's what actually kind of brings the speed of the engine and remains constant. That's why when you're driving, when you're pushing a snowblower through the snow at the end of your driveway and it starts to slow down, it never really slows down because the governor pulls on that spring that holds the throttle at a certain speed. So even though there is a, kind of a slow and high throttle setting, and a snowblower, when you put it on low, it's not really good for much of anything. So that's why it kind of runs at one speed. So the governor is the thing that holds the throttle sort of, for want of a better word, constantly open.
So is it basically because the small engines don't have a lot of torque or something, so it's constantly... The throttle is almost like in a constant movement
relative to how much work it's doing.
Yeah, to the stress that's on. That's run through and off somewhere down there, and you said it's...
It's centrifugal, and it's... a lot of people, the first thing they do when their snowblowers or other equipment isn't running, they look at that little spring that goes from the throttle to the governor, and they go, "Oh, I'm just going to crank this spring up, and now it's going to run faster." Well, it does run faster, but it never... But then all of a sudden, it loses the ability to adjust the speed based on the load of the engine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. So...
Yeah.
So if it revs up too much, these engines
it could blow. But the other part of it is you don't have that little extra reserve there for when you need it.
Right.
Yeah.
So
when you're going through, 6 or 8 inches of snow, and all of a sudden you hit that 2 feet at the end of the driveway, you want to know that the engine's got that little extra push to be able to get through that heavy stuff at the end. So, that's sort of what it does. And I got to tell you, I had an old snowblower. It was probably 20 years old, and I think the one I have now is even older than that.
Yeah, mine's 40.
Yeah. I don't know if mine's 40, but it's probably somewhere between the 20 and the 40, and you're 40.
Right.
And And it needed, the 20-year-old one needed a carburetor. And I looked at it, and I'm looking, and I said, you know, it's pretty simple. I could probably just pull it out and clean it. On the other hand, I looked up the carburetor number, and the carburetor was about $100. And then I looked up the carburetor number. I put the carburetor number into Amazon, and it popped up in Amazon for $23, brand new, in the box, tested. I put it on. The thing ran perfectly. And I'm like, this wouldn't have even been worth the, you know, having to go buy a gasket and a carburetor cleaner and stuff to clean it. So it was pretty inexpensive just to, you know, just to get a new one. But my word of caution is, you know, part of the problem is your old snowblower, which, they certainly don't make them like that. They're not as heavy. They're not as solid. But the old rubber hoses tend to deteriorate with the alcohol fuel, and it's that crap that comes from the rubber hoses that end up clogging up the little tiny ports in the carburetor. So spend a lot of time. If you see anything that looks like a vent hole or bleed hole or something like that, get a little piece of wire and just try everything you can to clean it out and get a good
hole. I did that already. Yeah, yep. I took the main jet out. Yep. It had two good small holes, yep, and they were, you know, a little, not too bad, actually not really very bad,
yep,
and cleaned them out with a little wire.
It's funny, it doesn't take much. And then at the, like I said, the other thing, you might want to just, you know, the new fuel line's fairly inexpensive. You might just want to go, you know, go buy some new fuel line for it. And, you know, even if you can't, you know, It would be good.
Well, basically, like I said, somebody had given it to me, and I'm a glutton for punishment. So I said, I'll screw around. And it was running, but it was bogging down under a load.
Yep.
And I noticed that governor thing, you know, back and forth with the carburetor throttle. And I'm saying, is it the governor?
It's probably not the governor. It's probably just you were probably on the money. It's probably just the carburetor itself.
Right, because when I disconnected that, you know, and with no load, you could throttle real high, and I said, well, I see it's protecting it. So, and I cleaned it. I haven't really run it yet or whatever, but that's just something I never worked on a little engine.
I got to tell you, I don't know a lot about them, so there's one of my New England Motor Press cohorts, John Zangari, him and his brother do a radio program down in Rhode Island, and John used to be a small engine teacher for one of the high schools. So I had him sit down with me one day with a, you know, piece of paper and a pencil, and I said, explain a governor to me on a lawnmower and a snowblower and everything else. And he said, well, this is how it works, and we drew pictures, and I said, that's what I thought, but I just wanted to you know, hear it without you know, without having to look it up and find out how it works. So
If I wanted to put a, I have an old fashioned tachometer, you know, dual meter. Where would I can I connect it to? I'm just curious how that thing idled and what it was.
There's
a red lead off of it, which is just basically a kill.
I don't.
Is there any way?
No, because it's probably, even as old as it is, it's probably not a point system. It's probably some sort of solid state system in there.
I think. It said it has points.
Oh, it does?
I found a schematic somewhere. There's a group of old errands people out there.
Oh, yeah.
There was some information.
If it does say it has points, if you can find the wire that goes down to the point set, which the point set's probably under the flywheel,
right?
Because that's the best place to put it. If you can find that wire and kind of tap into that somewhere, that would be the same as if you were you know, back in an old car, you would just get it off the same side. But the easier way is, and you would only need like a 40-year-old tack dwell meter, but they had inductive ones that you you know, you'll never find one that's for a one cylinder, but if you'd set it on the four cylinder side and then do some math to figure out what it's really idling at.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. an old steel dwell from the
center. So that's going to be the problem. And so measuring RPM, you know, now they have all these non-contact tachometers and all kinds of stuff. But if you took one that read, you know, read four cylinders, and you go, well, a four cylinder engine's going to rotate this fast, so a one cylinder engine's going to rotate that much different. So you do a little bit of math, and you come up with a, you know, something that looks like it makes sense.
Right. So in the kill wire, that basically goes, that's just coming from the magneto, then, right?
Right. Yeah.
It?
So
and that's just grounding it out.
That's all it's doing. Like the 5-horsepower snowblower that I had that I put the carburetor on, the kill wire from the switch actually rotted off, so I just got a little, you know, little contact switch just to just to hook it up and then just grounded it to something, so when you hit the button it would shut it off.
Because you don't want to, you know, the only other way to shut them off is to, you know, choke them out, and that's not good because you end up putting too much fuel into the oil.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. Yeah. I was doing that because the ground wasn't hooked up.
Right.
And I said, this isn't really good for...
Yeah.
Well, the good old days, now, when things were very simple.
Well, and they are simple, but it's funny. It's like some of those things, I looked at a snowblower, I don't know, before the winter, and the thing wouldn't run, and looked at it, and for some reason pulled the dipstick out of it and checked the oil level. It was way full. Well, it was way full because the person didn't take the gas out of it. The gas drained into the oil, and it washed all... It washed the oil off of the inside of the cylinder, which meant it lost compression, and it would spin over really good. It just wouldn't start, and it wouldn't start because the oil was so diluted. Put some fresh oil in it, spun it over a couple times, started right up, and ran great. So,
yeah, if you're anybody that ever works on these old engines or old cars, you really want to understand how efficient and clean cars are. Work on one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And have that exhaust running in your face.
Oh, yeah.
You smell like after a few minutes.
Yeah,
you know?
No, it's amazing.
Yeah. Thank
hey,
you very
okay,
much,
take care now.
Talking
yep,
to you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Let's see. I think we're going over to Jim. Jim? John? Somebody?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I had a...
Uh-oh, we're kind of losing you here. Sounds like we got a bad cell. Spin around. I'm still here, but... So,
oh, okay.
Okay, go ahead.
85 Jeep Grand Cherokee. The roof drains from the moonroof keep clogging up, and I wanted to have clues to try to keep them flowing.
Don't park under trees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have any buildup in there.
Yeah.
See, but something down there. I don't know if there's a lube you could put down to keep them flowing.
No, not. I mean, you could try. What I would try is, first off, you know, just use low pressure to try to clean the drains. You know, don't get, you know, don't go shooting them with 100 pounds of air pressure because then you'll just, you know, you'll just break it. And then maybe a little bit of silicone spray. Take some silicone spray, spray it in there, and then take a little bit of more air and put it on top of it. Maybe the silicone will just make it a little bit slippery.
Yeah.
But other than that, make sure the end where it probably exits, you know, in the, you know, by a door pillar or something like that, to make sure that you know, everything is open and clean. Short of that, I'm not really sure. What year Grand Cherokee is it?
It's a 05.
And is this, when you get it cleaned out, how long does it last?
I've done it a couple of times, so we might be getting a year or so out of it. But and I don't really know where they dump, but I find that the interior starts getting wet, and you realize that must be the problem.
Right.
Yeah.
And then,
so I don't know where it's supposed to go, but it ends up in the passenger or the footwell.
And then you get it cleaned out, and then it seems okay for a year.
Yes.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I mean, the other, you know, it's getting clogged because of some reason. I mean, you look at cars and how they work, and they're you think about them. There, it's a box just being continually pummeled by water, and you think, you know, water runs in between the doors and they come out, you know, comes out the vents in the bottom of the door, and you kind of wonder how does this all, you know, continue to work and not leak uncontrollably, you know, when things clog up, because it is really, there's water constantly running around the car. So I would just keep trying to, you know, do a little bit of research and find out. Like I said, normally what happens, and I don't know on this particular Jeep, but normally what happens, the way it works is the sunroof drain in most cars, the ones that I've seen, the drain usually comes out either right in front of the door, like right where the door hinge is, or right in the middle pillar between the two doors. So that's usually where they are, and sometimes it can be a matter of, you know, whatever's going on there. But let me, you know, strangely enough, there's a technical service bulletin. Let's see what this is all about. It says, A customer may experience a water leak at the A-pillar grab handle. So it's, in other words, it's, you know, right at the windshield. And it says, left to right side in the area of the overhead console. Analysis has found that possible causes are water leakage in these locations. A pinched or collapsed front sunroof drain left or right between the headliner and the metal roof panel and the outboard sun visor attachment can be pinched and cause the problem. Body seal or void at the top of the A-pillar can also be a problem. And it says a restricted rear sunroof drain left or right that exits at the end of the drain tube. The rear sunroof drain tube is routed down along the C-pillar. So, you know, looking at the windshield being A, the middle being B, the third one over being C-pillar, the end of the tube may turn back on itself and may be part of the problem. So at least you know that it's either going to exit at the bottom of the windshield pillar or all the way back in like the in the passenger door second, you know, the backseat passenger door pillar. So that's where the drains are. So I would start with you know, go to a store and buy a can of like the aerosol cleaner used to like clean keyboards and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, stick the little straw in there and block off the end and, you know, spray it and see what happens. The drains will look fairly obvious. When you have the sunroof open, you'll see something that looks like a drain. And if you see it at the other end, if you open up the door and you go, oh, I see a little hose that looks like it could be a drain, spray it back up the other way and see where it comes up the other side and then kind of go from there. If that isn't it, I saw something similar to this, and you actually ended up having to take the sunroof out because it was actually a pinch weld that kind of broke free and the seam sealer broke, and that's what actually caused the leak. But if you're fixing it by getting the drains cleaned out, I think it's just junk getting into the drains. So, you know, open the sunroof up, scrub everything in there good and clean so nothing deteriorates, breaks off, and then just, like I said, try a little bit of that low-pressure aerosol spray and see what happens.
Very good.
Okay.
Thanks for your
help. All right, take care. Bye-bye now. Let's try one more phone call here. Good morning. You're on the Car Doctor program.
Hello, it's John. How are you?
Hey, good, John. Sir. How are you?
Well, not bad. I just had a couple of quick observations.
All right.
All of which you already know. From my personal, be personally aware of them, I found that Toyotas and Fords don't seem to leak at all. Mopars and GM cars, you end up with a foot well and a trunk full of water.
Freezing. Yeah, you know, it's funny. Years and years ago, I was at some kind of radio party, and it was a bunch of people I didn't know, and there was the guy who had the online doctor show and the online lawyer show and the, you know, all those kind of people, and they were from all over the country. They were from it was a syndicated program, and I was the guy who did this stuff. And I was talking to somebody. I walked over. I saw a guy who's kind of standing there, and I said, "Oh, what are you doing?" He said, "Oh, my wife's over there. She's one of the hosts of some show." And I said, "What do you do for work?" And he said, "I sell fasteners to the automotive industry." And I said to him, "You know who? You know when?" I said, "Fasteners." He said, "You know, the clips and brackets and stuff that hold cars together." And I said, besides that, he said, we also look at the cars and we decide, you know, what needs to be welded, what needs to be screwed together, what needs to be clipped together, what needs to be glued together. And I said to him, you know, who does the best at that and who does the worst? And he said, well, Toyota does a good job because when we tell them you're going to need, you know, 21 screws and 5 brackets and a bunch of sealer, they go, okay, that's what we'll do. And when we tell GM and Chrysler that we need, you know, 21 brackets and 15 screws and something else, they say, can we do it with less? Can we do it with half as many? And they go, well, yeah, but, you know, you may find out that over time, that's going to come back to haunt you. And back in those days, they didn't really care about it. And he said to me, you know, that's why you see a GM that's 5 or 6 years old that the door panel is loose because they didn't put enough. You know, we told them they needed to put, you know, 8 screws and 15 clips, and they only put 3 screws and 7 clips. So I think you're onto something.
Well, I get one other observation quickly and a question. I'm old enough to remember that something that you know already, that even way before World War II, all the magazines like Popular Mechanics, Popular Science, and Mechanics Illustrated all had ambitious efforts in flying cars.
They did.
With lots and lots of money put into them, never to be heard from again.
Yeah, I remember as a little kid sitting in the barbershop and, you know, flipping through, you know, whatever it was, Popular Science or something, and it was, you know, you could send for the plans for a flying car, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, Terra Fusia up in Woburn or Burlington, wherever they are, you know, they claim they have a flying car of some sort or another, and the problem is that it's more of a plane that sort of goes slow on the land rather than, you know, really a car that you can go, okay, I think I'll take off and go fly someplace and then land. So I think we're a ways out. The closest I saw was one just recently that looked like a motorcycle. And it was all enclosed. So think of a motorcycle that runs on like the Bonneville Salt Flats kind of thing, all enclosed in a bubble. And it actually had a helicopter rotor on it. So what happened was you could ride it like a motorcycle, an enclosed motorcycle, and then you could deploy the rotor and, you know, it starts spinning and all of a sudden the thing would take off and it acted just like, not even like a gyrocopter, it acted like an actual, you know, closer to a helicopter, and you could fly wherever you want to go and then, you know, look for a place to land and then fold up the helicopter blade and then, you know, ride it like a motorcycle. So, but I think we're time off yet, and who knows, maybe, you know, next year you can go to Dubai and, you know, check out that drone.
I'll eagerly await your test on it.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, you're going to send me to do it, okay.
My question I wanted to ask, which I don't know who's got the answer, how soon are they going to get rid of the alcohol that's ruining my antique cars?
You know, in some parts of the country, and I think it's Hawaii, has done away with it. You know, it's all this, and this could be, I'm not a political person at all, but this could be one of those times that, you know, this, the alcohol in gasoline was put in to, you know, lower vehicle emissions, and it was, and it does a good job, but it also ruins your antique cars. And the, you know, and part of it has to do with, you know, the alcohol is made from corn, and the corn lobby, you know, they are big in Washington. And, you know, I'm not saying that they paid a whole bunch of money to get alcohol put in gasoline, but maybe they paid a whole bunch of money to get alcohol put in gasoline. So
I was recently in Burlington, Vermont, and most of the gas stations have unalcohol gas. They get it from Canada.
Yeah. In fact, I was down at the Heritage Plantation down in Sandwich, and I was talking to the guys that maintain their cars down there, and they go to the airport and they buy fuel from the airport because that way they know there's no alcohol in it.
Well, thank you very much.
All right.
Also, thank you for the nice prize you sent me a couple of weeks ago.
All right. Thanks, John. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Let's take a little break, and I'll rest a little bit. My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. We'll be right back.
Don't you just hate the hassle of car buying? Make it easy by finding your financing first. Hi, I'm Kevin Chapman. As a member of the City of Boston Credit Union for over two decades, I know that they always put their members first with some of the most competitive car rates around. You can figure out what you want to spend before you even go shopping. Come visit the City of Boston Credit Union at cityofbostoncu.com and apply today. Or call 617-635-4545. City of Boston Credit Union. Uniquely Boston.
Equal opportunity lender.
This is a special notice to consumers struggling with overwhelming credit card debt due to the financial hardship many are facing in today's economy. National Debt Relief is excited to offer a program that can reduce your credit card debt by thousands of dollars. Beware, the credit card companies do not want you to get this information. To see if you qualify to have your debt reduced, call the National Debt Relief Hotline at 800-691-2148. Qualifying for this reduction will reduce your overall debt and significantly lower your remaining monthly payment. If you're facing financial hardship with over $10,000 in credit card debt and need help, call now. Learn how you can reduce your credit card debt by thousands, all by using a proven A-plus Better Business Bureau rated debt relief system that negotiates with the credit card companies for you. To ensure your financial stability and to see if you qualify, call the National Debt Relief Hotline at 800-691-2148, 800-691-2148, 800-691-2148.
The mission of the Allied War Veterans Council is to mobilize communities to honor, support, and serve America's veterans and military service members. The council is made up of volunteers who are dedicated heart and soul to ensuring that veterans and their families receive the support and opportunities they have rightfully earned. For more than 112 years, Boston has captured the world's attention with the gesture of honoring and recognizing our veterans and servicemen and women through the St. Patrick's Day Parade in South Boston. Not just the celebration of all things Irish, this parade is the celebration of all things American and the great people who put their lives in harm's way every day for us. If you believe in the mission to help and support veterans and their families, the Allied War Veterans Council of South Boston needs your help now. Please donate today by visiting online southbostonparade.org. Your support changes lives for veterans throughout Boston.
Honda Cars of Boston is Greater Boston's neighborhood Honda dealer with over 800 new Hondas available to choose from. Just 5 minutes from Boston on Route 99 in Everett, our beautiful new showroom makes your Honda Cars of Boston experience even better. Visit online at HondaCarsOfBoston.com and see all of our tremendous purchase, lease, finance, and certified pre-owned specials. Honda Cars of Boston on Route 99 in Everett is the place for great buys from the Honda guys. Give them a call at 1-800-65-HONDA.
WROL Boston. You're listening to The Car Doctor.
Get hip to the style of fit. Yeah, go take that California trip. I get your hip. I'm Route 66.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program. I forgot how to talk. Let's see, where are we going? I think we're going to Billy. Billy!
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Excellent. Good day. Yeah, my question regards steam on the inside of your windshield when you put your heater defrost on.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, is there a product out there that eradicates that?
Not really. It's caused by just too much moisture inside the car. First off, make sure that the defroster setting is set on the fresh air setting, not the recirc.
Okay.
Because if it's on recirc, you're doing just that. You're recirculating your own breath, and eventually you'll just, it'll start dripping inside the car almost. The second thing is the air conditioner or heater system has a drain. And you want to make sure that drain is working properly, because if it isn't, if it's clogged up a little bit, you'll get a little bit of moisture that builds up inside the evaporator box, and that moisture will just put more humidity into the car. The other thing is, it's not a bad idea, to especially this time of year, to get out with a wet vac and just vacuum all the carpets and try to suck any moisture out of the carpets that might be there just from snowy shoes. But the biggest thing usually with moisture is either the fresh air recirc switch isn't working or it's set on recirc. I notice if I forget to, if I hit mine accidentally, by the time I get to work, the inside of my windows are steamy.
Yeah, and your wife is suspicious.
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right.
I heard, I don't know if it's true, about shaving cream.
Yeah, I mean, because it has soap and alcohol in it, it's supposed to keep that from happening. It's just like if you do the same thing with your bathroom mirror, if you wipe it all down with shaving cream, it's supposed to keep the mirror from getting steamy. But better is to eliminate the source, you know, so figure out why it's getting steamy to start off with. So one of the glass companies, glass cleaner companies, I don't remember who it is exactly, but somebody actually, I think it might have been Zepp or somebody, has a product that claims it eliminates steam and moisture buildup inside on windows. But like I said, you're better off trying to figure out why it's doing it to start off with. So rather than, you know, rather than have an ache or pain and fix it with an aspirin, figure out, you know, what caused the ache or pain first. So, you know, try to make sure everything's working good before you try to, you know, coat the window with the inside of, you know, the inside of the window with something that's gonna maybe make it not as bad, but still you're adding something to it rather than trying to fix what's wrong.
Yeah, it's an economical air freshener.
Yeah,
so, you know, you know, with the technology today with LED lights on these headlights that literally burn your retina out, and maybe I'd be better off just coating it with eggnog to filter out those UV lights.
Well, that, you know, you could try that. You could try that, but you know, you could. But yeah, I mean, some of these new headlights are. I was on kind of a dark, deserted road in Foxborough the other day, and somebody zipped up, and I could have sworn they had their high beams on. I don't know if it was true or not, but they seemed extra bright. And come to find out, when the car went by, it was probably a 10-year-old car that should have never had that style of lights in it. It was somebody that must have decided to upgrade their headlights to something else, and all that really did was just make it hard to see.
Yeah, I tried those glasses at the truck stop with the yellow tint.
Yeah, they don't work.
It takes the edge off, but they really do burn something.
That's not a great way to do it either. Hey, Billy, we got to get going.
I know. Well, good health. God bless you.
All right, thank you. Let's see if we get really quick to David. David.
Good morning, John. How are
good morning.
You?
Good.
It's funny. I was just thinking about the question I was going to write to call you about the fuel that you discussed there just briefly beforehand. Isn't there some place you can get fuel today that doesn't have the alcohol in it?
You can actually buy it by the gallon in some Tractor Supply, I guess, is one of those places that sells alcohol-free fuel. But it's ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, they want like $10 a gallon or something.
Yeah, and short of that, a small airport.
Well, I know the airport because I use that on old Buicks and things, but.
Yep.
That's tetraethyl lead in it, though.
Well, you can get it without lead too. They have,
you can.
They have one.
I love that one though. Then those days it was, they said low octane, 110.
Yeah, but they actually have a lead fuel still, and they have a non-lead fuel. Neither of them have alcohol in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's going to be pricey too.
I mean, it's, you know,
you don't use that much of it.
No.
I'm looking at the errands back in 2004, right in the manual. I never even looked at it at that point. It says do not use an alcohol derivatives, you know, ethanol in it. You know,
because and that's one of the things all the boaters found out with fiberglass gas tanks is that the alcohol and the fuel melted the fiberglass tanks, and unfortunately, a lot of cases they put the tank in and then they build a boat. So they had cut the boats in half to replace the tanks with stainless steel.
Yeah, that wouldn't seem right. Alcohol shouldn't affect the fiberglass.
Yeah, it does. It turns it mushy.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
As a chemist, I really wouldn't believe that.
Yeah.
I didn't
either, because I kind of thought you know stuff like that came in fiberglass, but I guess different than plastic. Hey, we got to get going because the very best in Irish music is coming up with Paul Sullivan and the Irish Hit Parade. So, thanks. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Yep. Thank you.
Hey, look, it's Paul Sullivan sitting right there. What you just did just surprised me.
What I do?
When you put your phone down, you heard it echo like...
Yeah.
Yeah, like there's something...
Want me to do it again?
Yeah. Well, you can if you want, but where is that coming from?
I don't know.
It's like there's a microphone glued to the bottom of the counter here.
I know.
Yeah, no idea.
What if I did this?
Yep, it's like you're playing the drums or imitating a horse gallop.
Or trying to be Nat King Cole.
Yeah. Or something, yeah, because it's about time for that. Hey, so what do you got coming up for the Irish Parade today?
It's President's Day weekend, which means absolutely nothing in Ireland because it's the United States president. So I'll try.
Well, it's sort of like, well, I guess you can't really say it. It's sort of like in Ireland, you know. Do they have July 4th in Ireland?
Yeah, but it's not a holiday.
No, it's still July 4th. So they have February 12th in Ireland?
Yeah. It's not Lincoln's birthday.
No, I know.
Right.
Okay, I'm done with my cleverness now. So
you're the king of clever. Yeah.
And coming up in a couple of weeks, a bunch of the guys are going to be down the Cape for the St. Patrick's Day parade, I think.
Poor Paul's not.
I know. You never go.
I'm here. I'm captaining the ship, as it were.
That's right. That's right. Somebody's got to be behind the wheel.
Someone's got to keep us afloat.
Yeah. Somebody's got to be behind the wheel, keeping us out of the weeds.
Yeah. Besides, I don't think they'll let me on the Cape anymore.
Ever since that time?
Yeah. There's someone at the bridge watching.
Is that? Yeah. I've heard stories. Yeah. Yeah. So.
I'm traveling today.
You are. You're headed down to see the grandkid?
I am. Look, I have the Patriot shirt on here. But then when I get closer to D.C., I get the Washington.
No, you don't. You actually just show yourself here.
Put your belly away.
Yeah.
So, I'm all caught.
So you're the back end
of the New Jersey turnpike.
Yeah, and I noticed a Bledsoe shirt, so.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Old time.
Yeah, I met him once. We didn't get along.
Really?
Yeah, he was at an event. He was supposed to sign an autograph, and he said he wouldn't do it.
For you?
Not for me, for high school kids. Aww. They were supposed to sign a football.
You know what?
But
just
he was
like this.
But he was young. But he was young, and everybody said it was kind of his age was part of the issue. So
hey, I got to travel, and you're Mr. Triptychs. Which way do I go?
South.
There you go. See that?
That's as good as I could give you.
That's your man right there. He'll be back next Saturday at 8:30.
Yeah, and do the speed limit because there are places that overly enforce the speed limit between here and Washington, D.C.
As they should.
Yep. The very best in Irish music coming up next with Paul Sullivan and the Irish Parade. Until next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, and be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.